Is there a doctor in the house? You bet. Hi, it's Dr. Lisa, and it's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. I give a shit. I mean, at least I act like I give a shit. So I want to encourage you to donate to Radio Free Brooklyn. You just go to the website, and we try to get people to donate like $1 a month just to make sure that donating actually feels better than drinking, believe it or not. The sixth or seventh drink I'm talking about. So I'm excited about who I have on my show today. I have Jim Malone, who is actually another show host here. And I've never had another host on before. So I think it'll be really cool. Plus, I already know Jim and have a warm place in my heart for him. So I think I'm happy. Actually, as I was sort of starting to tell Jim right before we got on air, I'm kind of happy that Jim's here today because I had the most neurotic causing morning. I had the worst, like, oh my God. Women are terrorized by their tits. I mean, men think it's great to have, you know, tits are all fun and games to you guys, but to us, it is a fucking nightmare. So a few, like 8 years ago, I had stage zero cancer, which they should never even put the word. Let me tell you something. It is the most fucked up thing they do to women. It's just this big scare tactic that involves, well, it's not really a scare tactic, but without getting into it, it's more of a psychological trauma than it is a physical one. And I've put it way behind me, but I, you know, go for my mammogram every year. And this year they decided to add in a sonogram, and the sonogram had something on it that made me really like sitting around. They don't tell you what's going on. They just come back and take pictures after pictures. And now I have to go for a biopsy, but I don't think it's a big deal. Like the guy spent the whole time, finally at the end, after they get you all worked up, they bring you in and show you the doctor who's like, don't worry. So I'm not really that worried about it. I'm just really pissed off at how they fucking terrorize us through our tits. Jim, you know what I'm saying?
Well, I'm learning.
So anyway, when you appreciate, you heterosexual guys or lesbians or whoever, if you're appreciating a woman because of her tits, remember, it's not all fun and games for her. There's a lot of work and a lot of mental anguish, okay? So you know, say thank you for taking good care of your tits so I can enjoy them. Jim, will you remember that?
I would hope that, the male in the partnership can help give them some tender, loving care.
Oh, yeah. No, guys are happy to touch them, mostly. Even my 60-year-old tits. I had them on display, you know. I mean, I have nothing about
it.
Yeah, I don't mind hiding my... I don't necessarily want to show them off, but I don't give a shit one way or the other. I mean... You know, everybody, there. Yeah, look, you know, I've been
Dr. Lisa gives a shit about everything except showing her tits. She doesn't give a shit about that.
I don't give a shit about that. Ask me anytime. I'll show them to you if you really want to see them. I mean, it's nothing all that special. But so anyway, I want to get to you, Jim, because we want to do some psychoanalysis, psychotherapy on you today. And what I really want to do is, before we do that, is get to talk about your show a little bit. I want to hear about it, and I want to hear about what you've been up to. Like, do a little self-promo, if I may be so bold as to put it that bluntly.
Okay. So, it's funny. I just listened to my very first show over the last couple of nights 50 years ago this week. That's every Tuesday night, 8 to 10 p.m.
Right
Eastern
here.
Time.
Right here.
Yeah.
On Radio Free Brooklyn.
And it's called 50 Years Ago This Week. And the way it started, very briefly, is that basically I was home and not doing a whole lot and decided that I would... Actually, I think it was inspired partially by Trav S.D. You know Trav,
yes,
right?
Yes. Yeah.
And he is just such assiduous work of putting up on his blog birthdays of vaudevillians, and I wanted to do something like that. And I've always been kind of obsessed with pop charts, and I realized that I was getting to the age where I begin to remember what they were playing on the radio 50 years ago. I just turned 60 in September.
A 1956 baby.
1955 baby.
Okay.
And I put up on Facebook every week 50 years ago this today on, you know, and said what was number one or number two or what was the highest rank I hadn't done yet. And just did a little report about what a song was, posted up the covers and that kind of thing. So people knew about it and, you know, people liked it. And when Rob and Tom started the station, they asked if I wanted to put that on the air. And I said, sure. And it's a lot more work. So what I do every week is we look at the chart from exactly 50 years ago from the Billboard Hot 100. It's all online. And I play pretty much every song that is on the chart on its way up, and then I flesh that out with covers of songs that either, you know, that came after, or in the case of a song that was a cover, perhaps the original or earlier versions of it. And we count it down from 40 to 1 every week.
Wow, that's so awesome. That's a lot of work, Jim, isn't it?
It is a lot of work.
It's not
it
just
takes,
like
takes
getting...
It takes me about 5 hours to prepare a show.
Wow.
I have to... I basically buy, you know, the songs I don't have, which comes to about $10 a week or so, you know, as songs enter the thing. And so I've got this great library of... songs from the mid-60s.
And you're expanding your knowledge as well.
I am, yeah. It's.
I mean, it's a lot of work, but it sounds like very rewarding.
Yeah, I got to where I would, and we may talk about this later, about my fascination with randomness, but I decided I was stressing too much about what covers I wanted to play, so I adopted a random system of how I choose the covers that I'm going to play. Basically, I take a rank at random and see if there's anything there, and then I try and play the top hit on iTunes for any given song, and that has led to some fascinating things I didn't know. I mean, for example, the one good one was Sonny Bono had one hit, a solo hit. It was called "Laugh at Me," which was a hit in '65. And there are so many punk bands that did that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that did the cover of that. It's amazing. So I played 5 or 6 of those.
Oh, wow. That sounds really cool.
Yeah, yeah. And so there's always a surprise every week.
Wow, it sounds like a trip down memory lane but it sounds like you really kind of get the spirit of that time period.
Yeah, I mean, now we're getting into stuff I remember, or a lot of it, you know. I mean, I think in my 20s, 30s, listening to radio, I would listen to oldies radio a lot, so I would, you know, I would know a lot of this stuff already.
And you play music? You used to? Or
well,
you do now?
I do. In fact, the other thing if I may, is I will once again be in Jessica Delfino's Funny Songs Fest.
I did not know that.
Oh, yes.
This is Jim.
Oh yeah,
you're
I'm
just
not sure.
A guy that I like hang out at parties
with.
Yeah,
right.
I don't even know like the more deeper valuable parts of your existence. I guess it's good that you're on the show so I can find out.
I thought of asking you whether I should do a certain song this time, which obviously you haven't heard any of my songs, I got into funny songwriting when I discovered the surf reality scene. I showed up at Surf Reality in '96.
You're part of that whole history.
Yeah, I tried writing songs. I tried to form a band a lot of time in Boston, and that never worked out. But I kind of my breakthrough song here in Surf Reality, probably in '97, was the Hemorrhoids song.
Oh, that sounds really cool. So is there anywhere we can hear your songs? Are they online now?
There is, I'll tell you what. You know what? There is a YouTube of me doing three songs at, there was a cabaret, a 24-hour cabaret marathon on January 2nd of this year. So that's up there.
Oh, will you send that to me? Send me a link to that, and I'll post it. And then I can also appreciate the other side of Jim. Because I just think, like, when I go to, like, a party of whoever that we know in common, I'm like, oh, there's Jim. He's always, like, fun and relaxing. Jim, I find you very, like, you know, I get socially anxious sometimes around people, but you don't push that button for me.
Good.
And I don't know why that is, but I don't know. I mean, I appreciate it, though. That's all I'm saying, which is probably why I know you more as a person that I have seen in person as opposed to, like, somebody that I've spent time around as opposed to somebody that I know just from what they do.
Right, right. Let me get in those dates.
Oh, yes, please
it's,
do.
It's Thursday the 19th at 10 o'clock. There's a late show.
Of May,
yeah. That'll be at Jessica's space called The Unicorn. It's on Henry Street in
105
Chinatown.
Henry Street.
You got it.
105 Henry Street. It's a great place, and Jessica's awesome. Shout out to Jessica because she's pregnant.
Yeah. And then on Friday night, I'll be once again part of the 50 Funny Songs show. And that's going to be at Littlefields.
Which is great.
And those are always very rowdy. I think I got the majority of the song nailed down just a couple nights ago.
Oh, wow.
Anxious to write it and pretty excited.
I want to go to that. So say that time and date again.
So that one is 7 o'clock on Friday the 20th.
Okay, I'm putting that on my calendar because that's early. I'd like to go to bed at 11. See,
That's why I'm.
Well, I don't like to go to bed. I like to be home by 11.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jim, we were going to have do some psychotherapy with you today.
Okay.
So let's see what we can talk about. What's been going on? What's going on in your?
Well, you know, it's interesting. This is going to be an interesting weekend for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's just about 4 years ago, you will recall, you were part of the Bushwick Gallery, and you were doing your grandma character.
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh. And you may or may not recall, I showed up, and I videoed you.
Yeah, so it's one of the few videos I have, and I use that one all the time. It was terrific.
But then I was one of your grandchildren.
You sat on my lap.
You couldn't quite support me on your lap. But yeah,
I tell you that you were my favorite?
You did.
And did I tell you that I loved you? You're my favorite.
You did.
And that I was proud of you?
But what I was in a not good place at that point, and I kind of laid my head on your lap and moaned about how I didn't have any money and I didn't have a job and I didn't know what I was going to do. And it was, it was all true. And shortly thereafter that I moved home, partly because I was out of money and couldn't find a job, and also because my mom had taken a turn for the worse, and so my dad needed help with her. So that's about exact. That's 4 years ago this summer, and we are now about the halfway between now and then. My mom passed away in 2014, so since then I've been living home in Westfield, New Jersey, the past 4 years, so one thing that did come out of that is that I did get a not bad sized inheritance, so I don't have money problems anymore, really. But my income is minimal. I work as an editor as a freelance editor, mostly for a company called Princeton Review that puts out test prep books for all the tests, SAT, PSAT.
It's a big company.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I correct, grammar or often facts in like a U.S. history took edit took the writers to task on some things, and I never see whether they accept my changes or
you
not.
You know,
really.
That's so funny because one of my, I know I'm interrupting. My friend Henry Baumgartner, have you ever met him by any chance? He's been around for a million years in the East Village and stuff. I think he lives in Queens now or something. But mm-hmm. I used to like, oh, he's a proofreader. So I used to say, you know, Henry, your only mistake is finding other people's mistakes. You don't even make your own mistakes. It used to make me mad.
I was a fact checker for many years at magazines Worth magazine.
Oh yeah,
and then I had a better job at Inc. magazine. I wasn't, at first a magazine called Lotus back when there was a company called Lotus that invented the spreadsheet.
Microsoft. Remember when we used to read magazines? Remember when we used to read magazines, those things that they would print out on paper?
Oh, I still do.
I love magazines.
You saw me reading a magazine
on
the way
Atlantic.
I was.
You're really educated, Jim. You know shit. Your mind retains things.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
So,
I admire that.
In my journalism career, I found that people who can't figure out percentages get promoted to editor. and people who can remain fact checkers. So that's my cynical take on that.
Uh-huh.
This weekend, my plan is tomorrow night to spring it on my dad that I'm going to move back to the city.
Ah.
And I'm not sure how he's going to take it.
Oh.
And then on Saturday night, I'm going to dinner with my sister and her husband and tell her how Friday night went. My sister thinks he won't have a problem with it at all.
Okay.
She said nobody expected you to live in the attic for the rest of your life. And the way you put it like that sounds right. But I am not sure. My dad does expect me.
Well, I'm glad you've brought that in because that's like a really tough thing to go through. And I want to make sure that we can give you the best shot at making the best outcome.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty heavy shit to have to deal with. I do like right away remarking that your sister's supportive of you. I like that right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
Is there, and her husband too, or?
Sure.
Yeah. So tell me about where does your sister live anyway?
She lives in Morristown, New Jersey.
And how close is that to where you're?
Oh, it's like a 45-minute drive.
So you moving out, is that going to be extra responsibility to her with your dad? Is that going to affect her?
Interesting question. Probably a little. I mean, I think we will be equidistant from him. Mm-hmm. I mean, he is 88, and mm-hmm. he is in fine health.
Mm-hmm.
He still writes. He wrote for the Wall Street Journal his whole life.
Wow.
And still does. And he's got a book coming out this November.
Really?
And another one coming out on its heels probably in 2017, I would guess.
Wow.
He is doing fine.
What does he write about?
He writes about economics,
Jesus.
Generally.
Smart.
Although he wrote editorials for the journal for a long time. So
wow.
That was on all kinds of, so politics, economics. But these days, I would say most of his articles are about economics in some way or another.
Mm-hmm. So he's got brains.
Yeah.
What did your mom do?
She was also a journalist.
Really?
They actually met on when they both worked for the Logansport Ferris Tribune of mm-hmm. Logansport, Indiana.
Oh, wow.
My mom got a job, a real step up, for the Muncie Evening Press in Muncie, Indiana, and and then got my dad a job. And they got married when they both lived in Muncie. Mm-hmm. And then just a couple years after that, my dad got a job in Chicago with the Journal
mm-hmm.
and was with the Journal for the next, like, 52 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So they sound like smart people. Did they have a good relationship?
They did. Yeah, sure. A very, very good, close relationship.
Oh, that must have been really, great to have to grow up with that.
Yes. We certainly had our conflicts as one does in,
really?
In generations and
really?
Parents. Oh, sure.
No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Well, also. So,
and very, you know, I have a middle sister. Marianne is the one in Morristown. She's the youngest. I'm the oldest. And there's a middle sister who now goes by Molly, and she lives in Brattleboro, Vermont.
Oh, so are you not close with her?
Pretty close with her. I have specific issues with her at this point that we may get into. I think we're, we're all doing okay now.
Right.
Know, should we go to those issues right now?
I think we should really try to focus a little more. I'm just trying to get the background so we can focus on your what's going on with your dad, and then maybe see if it's relevant, more relevant. So I just want to get, I was just trying to find out if your parents had a good relationship, because that would sort of, influence how your dad was. So what is going on with your dad now? What happened? You moved in there. Your mom was, what did she have?
She had Alzheimer's,
but
she was also bedridden. She had what happened was they went to. I mean, she was started to do poorly, but spring of 2012, they went out to Indiana, and then she had a seizure pretty much after they were out there. So she was in the hospital there for a few months, and then they brought her home. And at that point, she couldn't walk; she was bedridden, and that.
So that must have been a very, very difficult, 2 years? A very difficult 2 years with you and your family, you and your dad and your mom, right?
Yeah.
Was that really, really hard?
It sounds like it is. It was easy. I mean, my job was to basically pick her up and put her in a wheelchair and wheel her in for dinner. And then we would have dinner, and then we'd put her back to bed. And,
So she ate, which she ate, obviously.
She ate, yeah.
Was she cognizant at all, or?
Hardly. It was,
How did she eat?
She was essentially a bundle of fear and confusion, I would say.
So that must have been really hard to see.
Yeah, I mean, there were amusing moments.
I had an aunt with Alzheimer's. It's like having a baby around. They say the funniest things. Right.
Like, for example, one time, I would have to tell her what I was going to do when I was picking her up because, she would. So I had to phrase it right. I mean, at one point, and, the point was I would undo the covers and swing her legs around and then pick her up by her shoulders and put her in the chair. And so at one point, I would tell her what I was going to do. And at one point I said, okay, so I'm going to take your feet. And then she wagged a finger at me. You are not taking my feet.
That is kind of funny.
And
where are the feet? Where are the feet? You don't have them now?
Right.
You should have taken them.
Right.
There's an art project in there.
Another time, this is an amusing one. Another time, she didn't know me. She didn't.
Right.
Sometimes she would call me, that boy, or sometimes she'd call me that white-haired old man.
Nice.
And
did you say, "Well, look at you, Mom"?
She would track conversation. So one time, my dad and I were talking about another writer at the Wall Street Journal, and I said to him, he said he was a little difficult to work with. And I said, yeah, he seems like kind of a hard ass. And my mom heard that. She said, what did you say? And I said, this guy, he kind of seems like a hard ass. And she said, as your mother, I will thank you to not use that kind of language.
Oh.
So that's the one time
she
knew who I was.
She knew.
When she knew to.
So that must have been really, I find that very meaningful and touching and generous and caring that you helped your dad out. Was he appreciative or?
Oh, sure. And I'm thankful to him that he quickly got me out of diaper changing duty.
Did he get a nurse?
What's that?
I mean,
he'd learned to do it himself.
Oh, I see.
We had a home health care person.
You did,
three times a week.
Oh, okay.
So he had to do it himself a lot. I helped at first and did sometimes when he wasn't there.
Right.
But you
did it together. Did it change your relationship with your dad at all, or must have?
At first there was friction. He had this idea that that he wanted me to collaborate with him on this book he was writing. And, well, I mean, I did, this was a sort of a different version of it. He wanted me to investigate humor of the 30s and write
that's
about.
Funny.
And, but it wasn't something I was into at all. And,
so
and
there was friction about that.
There was friction about that.
But at the end of the day, you wound up staying there two years after your mother passed away,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So what was that about? Was it just like convenient? You know,
easy and
yeah, I bet it was.
And you know, you're not paying rent, not paying anything really.
So
it
was just
but it, you know, it's time to. Time to move on.
So when you look back on the period of the whole 4 years, would you say like it has a – what would you say, like a positive sense or a
– Well, there was a bad thing too, which is that I had lost health insurance.
Oh,
and
Jesus,
so
country.
I had been – you know, I've got diabetes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And high blood pressure.
Oh, man.
And I had been taking testosterone. So that kind of, you know, and I just went without stuff for 2 years, and I finally got enrolled in, it's not exactly Obamacare, it's Medicaid in Jersey, which turned out to be pretty darn good.
Good.
For the past couple of years, except for the fact that now it's been canceled or suspended in the past month because of a kind of silly mistake I made, other people made. But and so I'm waiting to see. It should be reinstated, but this is kind of screwing me up.
So the whole 4 years adds up to a combination of convenience and helping. Started out with that, and now it's time to move on. So what do you imagine your father's going to say? Do you think he's going to be surprised, or like what does it feel like to what are you feeling? How do you like what's going on? Like how do you imagine telling him? How does it feel? Like describe that.
Well, I'm not. If he asks, yes, it's interesting. He never got to ask what I was doing today because I wouldn't have wanted to tell him.
Right.
I could have said, well, I'm going to be shrunk on the air. Please don't listen. But that's, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, he didn't ask. So, but I'm wondering if he'll ask me what I'm doing Saturday night. And if he does it, I'll say, well, I'm going to have dinner with Marianne and Johnny, and we're going to talk about how the next 10 minutes of you and my conversation right now went. So
you're sort of planning on bringing it up in a sort of humorous way? Or what? Let me ask you this.
What is
the obstacle? Like what is – it's obviously causing you anxiety as it would make sense. It's natural. But what are you – where's the anxiety? What are you concerned about? What are you saying? What are you afraid?
Oh, the fact that without, you know, that – I'll be paying rent, and this little nest egg there will be a clock ticking. I mean, I've probably got enough to even last a year without income, not much more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be making some income, but I'll need to make more income. So
you're worried.
It feels like I'm, you know, I'm 60, and it feels in a way like I'm six
right.
and started school
oh,
again.
I know.
Or maybe, you know, 22 and out on my own. Way out of college and stuff. You know,
no, this is a really tough period of life. I mean, because you know, it's I think that you know the 60s or you know late 50s, early 60s are pretty transitional because we all are. It's not just you
yeah,
or me.
I was,
we're all. I mean, I see it all around with people my age, our age.
Yeah, I was laid off when I was what? It was 2011.
It's a hard career.
And you've got age discrimination now in terms of
I mean it's a hard time to look for a job in this economy and it's much different
I think
than just
I think it's
being,
easier than it was 5 years ago now.
But it's still it's just harder being at 60 than 50, like a lot harder. I get
right.
it.
Yeah.
But so you're sort of concerned, it sounds like, that your dad is gonna think that you're not making good use of your money.
Oh no!
I mean, what I was imagining you were going to say would be more about his, you know, that he didn't want to be alone, or you were afraid to tell him you were leaving.
It's more of that.
So can you? Because it's interesting what you said was about the, you know, the money. But you know, that you're going to be spending
your nest
egg.
Well, that's where my anxiety
But that's your anxiety.
But you know, in terms of the
dad conversation. Yeah, but we're focused on how to handle him. You're
right.
We're all, paying rent's everybody's problem.
Right, yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
But so what are you anxious about as far as telling him? What do you think what do you imagine he's going to say or?
Well, I mean, you know, my hope is that he'll say, you know, Jesus, I thought you'd never leave. The conversation that I worry will take a turn is like he might say, well, I don't think that's a good idea. And he might start quizzing me as to, you know, what my plans are. And at that point, I think I have to be firm and say, you know, listen, I have these conversations in my head all the time late at night and I may get angry. But, you know, I'd have to be firm and say, look, I'm not going to argue with you about or really discuss with you what my plans are. I'm just telling you that I'm going to do this, and we'll just take it from there.
Mm-hmm.
Because he does have a history,
mm-hmm.
and I think with all three of us, the relationship's a little different, but he does have a history of wanting me to do things I don't want to do and not liking what I do. And, you know.
But he's disapproving.
Say that again?
He sounds like he's a kind of disapproving kind of.
He can be, yeah. He can be critical. And I think his relationship with my youngest sister is quite different in that way. I think there's the thing about my parents is that they really did raise us, you know, telling us that we should do whatever we want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But then when we made those choices, they were not really happy. And I came to realize that the thing that they really liked was when I went into journalism. You know?
Oh, yeah.
And because I remember relatives on there growing up would say, well, you're going to follow in your father's footsteps and I hate that phrase, don't you? And that was a no. But I mean, it is the case
it's
that
annoying,
I didn't really
right?
do much of anything in my 20s. I helped found Improv Boston, which is still going strong.
That's pretty big.
But I worked as a part-timer at Barnes & Noble on the floor for 7 years, which is maybe not what graduate not putting himself to the best of his
right. So your parents are clearly like, you know, career people who've done well, and you're more of a creative person who isn't like doesn't have that same stick
and
to the
I'm kind
program.
Of in the middle that way. My sister Molly is totally in the creative stuff and not making money at all. And Marianne has done quite well as a writer. She's written for TV.
Wow.
And she actually just won an award in Nashville. And she won an award for a screenplay at the Nashville Film Festival last weekend.
Whoa.
So,
well, there's no shortage of mental power in your family. That's obvious.
Yeah.
But here's what I'm wondering about. What I'm wondering about is this is money that your mother left you just for you.
Right.
Okay.
Well, I mean, it was,
I mean, you know, everybody got what, yeah, whatever. But this is money that's allocated to you that is your money now, right?
Yeah.
And, so you're taking a bit of a risk, by moving out because you'll be able to pay for the apartment for a while, but then you can't pay for it for the rest of your life.
Correct.
Okay, so that's a little anxiety-producing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with your dad, what I am wondering about is if you're afraid that your dad is going to echo your fears, like maybe some of the things that he's going to bring up to you, like what are your plans – you might be projecting some of that on him. Is that possible? Or
yep.
You think so?
Yep. You know,
answer.
And there's a limit to how much, you know, I don't want to get into these discussions about, you know, justifying whatever I do to him.
Right.
If it boils down to it, I'm not really interested in his opinion. And when you put something like that to him. I mean, there's a cruel way to put it, but I think there's truth to it, that he is sometimes he certainly has played the editorial writer card, if you will, which is sort of an attitude that, well, I got paid to write my opinions, and so he thinks that because he got paid to write opinions for 30 years that his opinions on anything are worth more than anybody else's.
Well, that sounds really arrogant and obnoxious. Is that okay that I say that?
Yeah.
Is it arrogant and obnoxious to be around?
It's something. I mean, he's gotten a lot more humble, I think. I think in some arguments, I've won.
You're his kid. Yeah. So right. Arguments that you've won. So not only that, it's like it's almost like he's gotten this societal stamp of approval that makes him right. I mean, in front of everybody, including you and everybody else that's around him. You know what I mean?
To an extent, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he just does.
Yeah. But, we have honest – politically he's been a conservative, mm-hmm. but he, had expressed libertarian tendencies. I'm a through-and-through libertarian.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
Well, there was an incident. I don't know if we want to get into this because this can take an hour in itself.
But, God.
There was an incident in – to put it very briefly, 1990, they lived in my mom and dad lived in Belgium from 90 to 95. He was running the editorial page of Wall Street Journal Europe. And so came to visit them in 1990, spent a week with them. At the end of the week, I took a trip to Amsterdam and spent the day there, hit a couple coffee shops.
Mm-hmm. Got really stoned.
Yeah. And there was a little roach that I couldn't finish at the last place I went, so I just stuck it in my pocket, got topped the train back to Belgium.
Right.
And, well, ain't no Fourth Amendment in Belgium, so,
Was the police involved?
The police were involved.
Were your parents involved after that?
Oh, I'm afraid so.
So that's unpleasant.
Yeah.
They gotten over that?
Oh, God, yes. Yeah. So he's aware. He may be aware that I smoke pot up in the third floor.
He may not be oblivious.
Yeah. And if he's aware, he doesn't care.
Well, here's what I think, because I think this is – I'm going to say that I think some of this is – I think this is a really good example to discuss because I think that given the dynamic of who he is and who you're, dealing with him in growing up in your family, I think that, he may have power. You may be giving him some of your power, just in general, because, mm-hmm. He is probably a little bit larger than life, and he probably is really smart, and he's probably right about a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
But I imagine that might have gotten exaggerated in your mind and everybody else's. Did your mom treat him with any particular, respect as
Was
he, the genius or the right guy, whatever your dad says?
I mean, my mom was, he has a sort of intellectual intelligence, and my mom had a great deal of social intelligence. She, my mom was a schmoozer and had a way of making everybody.
So your mom actually probably helped his career enormously then.
Well, yeah, probably.
He had a representative. Mm-hmm. So when they had a party, did they have a lot of parties?
Yeah, they had.
They had a big social life?
I wouldn't say a huge one. They would throw
with
a
the right
party
people, kind of. Maybe.
Well, sure. I mean, it's suburban New Jersey, wealthy suburb.
And also, I mean, your father probably I'm wondering if your mom, your dad sounds like he must have been opinionated, and he was probably given a free pass for acting opinionated. But I bet your mom also smoothed a lot out for him with everybody.
Well, sometimes,
right?
Sometimes she would outdo him on certain conservative things. She would take a harder line than he would.
Mm.
So yeah.
And plus, they're very conservative. So I wonder if there's a little bit if you have a little bit of fear of him still. I guess that would be normal for anybody. He's a little scary. For anybody.
There's something of that.
Yeah.
But as I say, I try to.
But fear and anger are like close cousins, right? Yeah. So there's probably
this reminds me of something from my childhood. I was probably eight or nine or so, and I asked if I could wear something, a bit, you know, given the temperature, so a jacket or whatever I was wearing, and I said, "Mom, you know, is it okay if I wear this?" And she said yes, and then I continued to justify it after she had already said yes because I had prepared this argument.
Oh, that's so funny. Yes, see?
You know, it was okay.
See, that's what I'm wondering about. And I just think that, I want you to have, I'm trying to think of how to say this without sounding like, you know, like a condescending asshole. Like, for me to sound like a condescending asshole to you. So forgive me, okay?
Okay.
But, because I can't figure it out. So just forgive me. But I just want you to have all the respect that you deserve.
Right.
And I think you're giving some of it away to them. I mean, and your mom isn't here, I understand, but it is them in a way,
okay.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Isn't it them?
Yeah.
And I think your dad, you know, if you have, I mean, I see that with my husband, with Phil. Like, I'm just more socially, I don't know what it is, adept than he is.
Right.
And I definitely have helped his social life. Come on. No mm-hmm. way. Because
right.
I introduce him to people. I introduce him to gallerists that I know. I mm-hmm. mean, you know, when you have somebody helping you out that way,
mm-hmm.
it can really further, you know what I mean? Your father has probably had some help too. That's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So on a pragmatic level,
well, that is sometimes a source of contention is that he has always tried to and wanted to help me in certain ways, but all of these things have always backfired or not been what I wanted in terms of, say, for example, excuse me, like putting me in touch with conservative writers he knows and saying, well, you should write this for them about ending the drug war. And this, mm-hmm. this guy, a guy named Bob Terrell, he goes by Emmett Terrell,
mm-hmm.
Editor of American Spectator, very conservative guy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's really not interested, but I spent a lot of time on that or setting me up with a you know, setting me up with a PR guy in case I wanted to go into sort of corporate mm-hmm. PR.
Yeah, he's got great connections, I'm sure.
Well, yeah,
right?
But he was somewhat mendacious even and manipulative in the way he set that up. He said, well, here's a guy who wants to talk to you. And, well, he only wants to talk to me because Dad said I wanted to talk to him.
Oh, I see.
And I didn't want to talk to him.
Oh, you know? I see. Yeah, so. That's kind of aggravating. That's not – you know what? I'm just going to flat out say that's not right.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I wonder if your dad saw you for who you were.
Confrontation when – Back to Belgium for a second. What the cops did was you know, they found me with a joint. They arrested me and they typed mm-hmm. out a confession and they fined me the money I had on me. And I said, well, how am I going to get home? You take all my money. And said, don't worry, your parents will be there and they'll pay for your cab ride. And yeah, they were up and they were dressed because the Belgian cops had seen fit to come to their house and search it just to make sure I wasn't a fucking drug lord.
Oh, man. That sucks.
I mean, obviously that was not their intention. Their intention was to embarrass me. So
yeah, that's horrible.
But anyway, so during that conversation, he did, you know, Dad went on this thing about how, you know, there's sometimes that I think that, you know, you display things that are not the real you. And, you know, that really stuck with me.
What did that mean to you? What does that mean?
He thought that the real me was a lot more like him. and that my hippy-dippy tendencies were not the real me.
So he didn't know, he didn't really see you. He saw you through his own ego, if I may say so. I'm really trashing your dad. I'm sorry.
I think there's something to that.
He's really making me angry. I'm really kind of like, because I think you're like the sweetest, kindest person. I mean, as well as I know you. And I think that you probably have a lot of humility, which is one of the things that I find particularly charming and something I really respect about you.
Okay.
And I think that's a great quality and not a typical male quality by any means.
Okay.
And I think a lot of that may come from being around your dad.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to say that I don't think your dad really gets you. Do you? Is that
make
sense?
I think these days he maybe he's fine with the totality of me as it is now.
He sees you're fine, and you know you are who you are. But I mean, but I'm saying like he doesn't like he probably can't picture you in here having this conversation right now, maybe, or doing one of those funny songs, or has he come?
Well, I mean, I have played. Well, the thing with my funny song, you haven't heard any of them. So the thing is that
I did not prepare. No, my tits checked. Yes.
The thing is that my songs are deliberately provocative. That's why they're successful. Is that they are. On the edge of bad taste, but funny enough. That,
right.
So there's a lot of songs I wouldn't want. And, you know, you asked, do I have anything on tape? I think certainly during the 90s, and that's why the surf reality scene was so liberating and fun and everything. But, I mean, I think that there's a good chance that if, the songs I had written were out there and available on YouTube or whatever, then I might have a hard time keeping or getting a job.
Well, yeah, all of us. All of us.
I'm debating now whether for the Thursday show I should do my Monica Lewinsky song because she's kind of back in the news these days.
I know. Bring it, definitely.
You think I should?
Oh, yeah. Because especially now because we know Trump's going to be on that in a heartbeat once the real election starts. But I want to just know one more. We only have like 13 minutes left. Can you believe this?
Okay.
So I want to try and get to the bottom of this a little more, which is to understand on a pragmatic level what moving out will mean for your dad, as far as him being able to get around and all that kind of stuff. What do you do for him?
I don't know. Basically, he cooks and I clean up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so we have dinner every night when we're both there.
Mm-hmm.
And I help mow the lawn.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he has been a stalwart in the town of Westfield, is one of the only people in town who doesn't hire a company that hires Mexicans to mow their lawn, So,
but I mean,
he's a gardener.
Is he going to be okay by himself?
That's a question.
Really?
But I mean, I think yes. Physically, sure. Emotionally, I'm not sure how it will go down,
uh-huh.
and that might be,
And what do you,
that might motivate him? What I think might happen is that the fact that he wouldn't like being alone would cause him to critique my decision in terms of what's best for me when he would really be thinking about what's best for him.
Right.
And so I think it's important to make that distinction and, say, look, I'll take care of me. I'll be fine. And both between Marianne and me and to a limited extent Molly, we want to do whatever help you need as to what, I mean, he likes the house. It's a big old house.
Mm-hmm.
And, he did at one point. He said that he realized that if he ever wanted to leave the house, he'd probably do better keeping it and renting it out rather than selling it.
Mm-hmm.
He might do financially better that way. But
news,
I don't know what he wants to do.
Well, the good news is that physically he's in good shape. That's the best part of it,
yeah.
And he's sharp. He has his marbles.
Yeah,
that's really key.
Mm-hmm.
Does he have friends? Does he have other friends? You know, does he have a social life and stuff
like
that?
Yeah, although they're starting to lose their marbles.
Yeah, that's true. They're probably not.
He goes out to dinner with a couple every couple weeks. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, that that couple has a daughter who is married to Jim Jarmusch.
No kidding. Yeah, whoa.
He's having trouble hearing them. He's been very, when I needed a hearing aid, I went and got one. He's been very frugal,
vain.
What's the word? Miserly about spending money on a hearing aid.
Oh, really?
So he's got one now that works pretty well. Mm-hmm. I mean, actually, I think he does almost as well as me with what he has. Mm-hmm. But he does have a trouble hearing some conversations.
How is he about being alone? Some people are just fine with it, and some people hate it. Is he? How would you describe him about?
Well,
being...
I mean, you know, he. I mean, I don't know, you know, because he's been.
He's never lived alone.
He was with mom, you know, yeah.
Right.
Whereas
but...
I've lived alone. For large portions of my life.
Right.
That's something he's never
done
because I've been there since mom died.
Right.
And so he hasn't done that really.
But I mean, is he the kind of guy that's not happy if there aren't other people around? Can you tell? Or does he go places alone?
I think he's going to find that out.
So he's going to have a growth experience, really.
Yeah, yeah,
that's
yeah.
really, you know, that's a big part of it.
Yeah, yeah.
So here's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking that this is going to be a really good experience for both of you.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter, it sounds like your relationship with him is perfectly fine.
Right.
You know, I think that he must have been difficult to like have your own identity around for everybody, maybe more so for you being the oldest boy. I mean, it was probably toughest on you, right?
Yeah, yeah. Although my middle sister, Molly, you know, certainly had her difficulties and had her times when, you know, she just didn't want to come down. And there was an episode now about 10 years ago, 8 years ago, where he really wanted her down for Christmas and she was balking at it and, like, had all these things that fell through, but she, you know, she maybe kind of passive-aggressive accidentally fell through, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so he finally went up to get her and bring her back, and she didn't want to go.
He
essentially tried to kidnap her, and they had a scene in the parking lot in the Brattleboro.
Wow, awesome.
And
I wish Jim Jarmusch had gotten that one.
Yeah, I don't know if she knows.
So what was that like? How old were you? Were you a teenager or an adult?
Oh, no. This was just 10 years ago. So we were in our 50s.
That seems really wrong of your – I mean, your dad – I don't know.
He wanted to enforce family togetherness.
Was he out of control or did he just believe he was doing the right thing?
Well, he said, you know, he told Molly, get in this car right now or I'll never talk to you again. And so she didn't. And so he – he went back and he was contrite afterwards and he apologized.
Well, that's good.
And I think now he treats Molly with a great deal of deference and is just thankful that she's forgiven him for trying to kidnap her.
So she stood up to him. Good for her.
Yeah, yeah.
And was your mom in that?
She was just at home.
What was your mom's point of view on that? Did she stick up for – did she take sides or did she – what did she? What do you
what?
Think
I
she thought about –
I don't remember.
What do you think – what I mean, how would she have how would she have thought about that, do you believe? Like, was she on your dad's side or did she think he was overbearing? That sounds overbearing.
It's interesting. I don't really remember what she thought about it.
But did you see her generally as somebody who is on his side?
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
And he sounds a bit overbearing, right?
And sometimes – you know, and some – sometimes she would be the badass, you know.
So she could be overbearing as well. So they were a good team.
Yeah.
Good overbearing. Are you a Jew? Are you a Jew like I am?
Oh, no, not at all.
Oh, wow, that's so interesting.
I was.
So you're like a Protestant then, probably.
Yeah, I was actually, grew up in the Congregational Church.
Mm-hmm.
I was president of my church youth group. in high school.
So this makes me feel better. Things. It doesn't just happen in Jewish families where they have overbearing mothers. Good. So here's what I'm going to say. We have like 6 minutes left.
Okay.
I think this is such a great opportunity for you. I think this is a great opportunity for you to feel really centered and grounded and confident in the fact that you don't really have a plan.
Right. Yes, exactly. Well, I have a few ideas that of things I definitely want to work on. I mean, Tom is going to be my real estate guy, and my target is July 1st.
You don't have to explain this to me.
Well, I just want to – I do want to say
You
want
to
stuff.
Say it. Okay.
I want to say that, I'll spend the first month reuniting with my shit, which has been in storage in Brooklyn for 4 years at kind of a pretty penny at this point, and just getting very organized in a way that I didn't quite when I moved from Manhattan to Brooklyn back in 2010.
Sure.
Get very organized. And then I have a few projects, including music, I want to work on and see how to make income.
Jim, you are a really smart guy and very motivated. There's no question about that, right?
I sometimes wonder about my own motivation. I'm not as – there are people who are more
really,
motivated
there
than
There are.
Me.
Of course there are. Yeah. Look at Beyonce. But you're a smart guy and you are competent. You are competent.
Yeah.
As way more – come on.
Yeah.
So this is not – this is not like – you're not saying I'm going to my job right now is I want to run a music company, a record company or something. Like you're being real – you can get this together. It's not that hard. You can do it.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is this is a really great opportunity for you to be really centered about the fact that you don't have a cut and dried plan, but you've obviously have it sorted out. You know how you're going to get an apartment. You have ideas about what you want to do. You know what you wanted to do. Mm-hmm. Most importantly, you deserve to get back to the life that you put aside to help your family.
Gosh darn it, I'm good enough.
Jim. So, you did. I know some of it, was convenient for you, but. I mean, in your heart of hearts, I think you did a lot to help out your family, no?
Yes.
I mean, it was invaluable, right?
Yeah.
Have you been thanked for that by your dad, by the way? Has he shown appreciation for everything you've done?
I don't know.
I guess not. I hope your father doesn't listen to this because he's going to be mad at me. You're a lot nicer.
I think I arranged it so that... I didn't publicize this at all. But he doesn't know you.
You're a lot nicer to him than I am.
Right.
No, but I mean, do you see what I'm saying, Jim? It's like whatever you decide, like your plan for your life is really sensible. Mm-hmm. And there is absolutely nothing to explain or to rationalize.
Right.
I mean, there's nothing about that you could second guess.
Yeah.
Okay. But I also am really thinking in terms of how your father's going to react. I mean, I believe a really healthy way to react would be you've been a wonderful son, you've been there for us, and I'm happy that you're going to go do what you want to do.
Yeah, I don't think he'll say anything like that. But he may feel that. That does not sound like him talking when you say that. He's not much one for.
Being overly
thanks or so I just hope he's cool enough with it, and if he isn't, I'll have to be firm,
Anyway, I want you to say that to yourself though. Say that to yourself. Say I did something really great for my family, my whole family, and this is what I'm going to do, and I deserve, you should walk away from that feeling a little bit heroic.
Okay.
Because of what...
We can throw me a parade in Bushwick in July.
Yeah, no, you should feel really like you've done something great. No,
when is the Bushwick Gallery thing this year? They still have that?
In October.
Oh, really?
But,
it's later,
but,
huh?
But, I would try to be as, so how are you going to tell them?
At dinner on Friday night, tomorrow night.
And when you're having dinner with him, and you're just going to come out and say it, right?
Yeah. Possibly saying, well, I'm having – a possible way to go is saying, well, I'm having dinner with Marianne and Johnny. And because that's something we've never done. And I don't know if my sister – in other words, I haven't gotten together with them or my sister – without the presence of younger, you know, her daughter or dad in forever. You know?
Well, here's something. Here's something I'm going to say. We've got 1 minute left, probably less, is that I think you'll be best off if you start out in a direct way.
Okay.
And just say, Dad, I've got something to tell you, because that way he will see you, probably see you more clearly. If you couch it in anything, he's going to, like, use that as a – he must be – God – he must be – he's scary. I have a terrible problem with authority figures, so I'm sure if I